Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-o, 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 hey-o. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey-o, 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 hey-o. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey-o, 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 hey-o. Ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings. Nahastan anila nijone go shavothya, nijone go shavothya. Hey, hey, hey-o, 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 hey-o. Hey, hey, hey-o, 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 hey-o.
Way. Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Yeah. Music from the Drum Blackstone off their Kenny Records CD, Round Down Singing. The name of that song was Just Like Old Times. I featured that tune as an honor to today's program guest, Mr. Harvey Wasserman, whom I met some 35 years ago when people tried to defend a sacred Penacook Seacoast place we American Indians know as Winnemucca. In English, it is called Seabrook, the site of the nuclear power plant monster in what is now called New Hampshire. Now, Harvey Wasserman and I are fighting nuclear power issues here in Florida and other places throughout the world. Asquay, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. One of the great pleasures I have being a journalist is the opportunity to talk with very special people who are working for a better world. Today's program guest, Harvey Wasserman, is one such person. He has been what I term a planetary justice activist for much of his life. Harvey marched for civil rights, demonstrated against the Vietnam War and other U.S. interventions, was a member of the radical SDS, an organic farmer, a radio talk show host, historian, teacher, environmental activist, and journalist. A prolific writer, Harvey has authored or co-authored a dozen books and many publications. Mr. Wasserman is an advisor to a number of organizations such as Greenpeace and the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. Harvey Wasserman has inspired many people, including myself, to fight for justice. His civil disobedience arrests include the Pentagon, Diablo Canyon, Seabrook, and the Nevada test site. As I mentioned a moment ago, I first met Harvey, as well as many other fine activists, in the 1970s, when I also became part of the anti-nuclear power movement. As many listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, I had the honor to assist my Wabanaki tribal elders form with anti-Seabrook nuclear plant activists what became known as the Clamshell Alliance, named after our sacred Quahog clamshell. I wish to share an essay I was asked to write for a Clamshell Alliance anniversary book. It is entitled Quahog Alliance, A Native Thought. Quahog, the native term in the Algonquin language for the northern bivalve mollusk, Mercenaria, commonly called a hard clam who inhabits intertidal waters of what's now called the Atlantic coast of North America, is a marine clam that is honored by my indigenous people who are now called American Indians. The Quahog clamshell was not only a major source of food to Seacoast tribal nations, but was also the material used to make our sacred wampum. Wampum is and was not just decoration for jewelry, and it was not money as Europeans wrongly think. Wampum was in fact used to make treaty belts, which depicted native laws and codes of conduct of how to respect and care for each other and our natural world relatives, what in English is called nature. Animals, birds, plants, soil, trees, fish, and marine life. Kinon-Wontakwisin, all of our relations, as we say in my Wabanaki language. This is one of the most important teachings my Nitchitunganooks, my ancestors, tried to express to the Wampiskatonk, the people from across the waters. In other words, the non-native settlers who came to our homelands from Europe. 356 years after the pilgrims washed ashore at Patuxet, Plymouth, the monster known as the Seabrook Nuclear Power Station threatened to poison and destroy a culturally and biologically special seacoast area that generations of Penacook and other tribal peoples inhabited, a place for fishing, clamming, a place for ceremonies. The formation of the Clamshell Alliance, to me, represents the spirit of this special Quahog marine relative. It was a time when many different people came together to protect a part of Mother Earth and our own human species from the insanity of nuclear power. This, too, had been and continues to be a special concern to us American Indians who are direct victims of the nuclear fuel cycle, mining uranium on Indian lands, testing nuclear weapons on Indian lands, and trying to use Indian lands as nuclear dump sites. I remember Clamshell's New England No Nukes, No Dumps rally, accompanying Grandma Madras and Sammy from Indian Island, when the Thiva spoke to our sisters and brother Clamshells about defending Mother Earth and fighting the proposed nuclear industry dump in our Wabanaki territory on Penobscot land, now called Maine. The spirit of the Quahog, the Clamshell, is needed now more than ever. The resurgence of nuclear power throughout the world requires people to come together again to defend Mother Earth and all life from a greedy political economic insanity of nuclear energy and nuclear weapons. The Quahog wampum reminds us to have reverence for all life, to live in a caring and peaceful manner with each other and all of our relations unto seven generations into the future. Kinon Wontakwisin, all of our relations. Unquote. In the 1980s, Wabanaki tribal lands were also threatened by a proposed U.S. government nuclear waste dump we fought against. I am proud to say that both Harvey Wasserman and I continue fighting to protect Mother Earth and human health from energy development that rapes the land and impacts society. We advocate clean, safe, affordable, equitable, renewable, and a sustainable energy future. This is achievable through architectural and engineered conservation, efficiency, solar, wind, geothermal, and ocean current technologies. We say no more coal, oil, nuclear, tar sands, or natural gas. These poisonous energy sources not only harms all life on the planet, but is controlled by a dictatorial industrial elite whose greed has no regard for people or the biosphere. Recently, Harvey Wasserman was visiting Florida to meet with those of us in the state that had been involved with fighting proposed nuclear power expansion by the utilities Florida Power and Light and Progress Energy. One of Harvey's stopovers was here in Southwest Florida at the Hapachi Center. Hapachi is a special grassroots eco-community meeting place and educational center. In the cabin amidst the real Florida landscape, I had the privilege to meet again and interview Mr. Wasserman for this Wolf Mountain Radio program. Before we listen to our conversation, listeners who wish to learn more about nuclear energy issues are encouraged to listen to our Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices interviews with my friend Mary Olson of the Nuclear Information Resource Service and our Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices Program 2 interview from the 2009 Power Shift Global Climate Change and Energy Justice Conference Series. It is now my great pleasure to welcome Mr. Harvey Wasserman to Wolf Mountain Radio.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thank you so much. My name is Harvey Wasserman. I have been involved in fighting nuclear power since 1973. I did get involved with the Clamshell Alliance, which you've linked to the Quahogs in your excellent articles and writings. and opposed to nuclear power. We've been fighting them for more than 30 years with some success. We are continuing this fight, and I'm here in Florida to talk about four nuclear plants which are proposed here, which should be stopped, two at Turkey Point and two at Levy County. And nuclear power needs to be stopped all over the world, and I think we're going to have to be able to do it. Otherwise, I don't think we're going to survive.
Harvey, as someone like you who often speaks and writes publicly about serious issues such as global climate change and energy justice, I am very concerned about the misuse of words that are used to deceive people. One such example is that nuclear power is not a threat to our Earth's climate. That is an oxymoron, just like the expression clean coal is an oxymoron. Nuclear industry executives and politicians have been advocating the view that more nuclear power is a solution to global warming. This sentiment was even expressed by some at the recent United Nations COP15 Global Climate Conference in Copenhagen, Denmark. As a native person, I support the April 2009 Anchorage Declaration from the Indigenous Peoples Global Summit on Climate Change, where in under Calls for Actions, Item 6 mentions nuclear power as one of the false solutions to climate change that negatively impact Indigenous peoples' rights, lands, air, oceans, forests, territories, and waters. Harvey, would you please comment on this crazy public relations campaign that nuclear power is a clean, safe alternative to fossil fuel energy that does threaten our biosphere and impacts human health?
Well, nuclear power causes global warming. It doesn't help solve the problem of global warming. It's an instigator of global warming because the nuclear plants release large quantities of heat into air and water with their normal, so-called normal operations. They also create substantial greenhouse gases with the mining and milling and enrichment of uranium. They cause still more pollution with the unsolved problem of radioactive waste. There are numerous other problems with atomic power. It is unsustainable economically. It has no private financing for new reactors. It is unsustainable from an insurance point of view, in that the private insurers have not stepped forward to guarantee the public against liability in case of a major disaster at a nuclear plant, which could happen from terror or error. And what we're saying is, look, take the money that you are scheduled to waste here on building these failed reactors and instead increase our efficiency and bring in solar, wind, tidal, geothermal, ocean thermal, the kinds of energy I call solartopian energy. I do have a book called Solartopia, Our Green Powered Earth, and a website, solartopia.org, where people can come and hear Pete Seeger sing the song for Solartopia. And we have a vision of an Earth that runs completely on renewable energy with increased efficiency, revived mass transit, the whole deal. It is possible. In fact, not only is it possible, it's necessary. We have to do this or we're not going to survive. And so, you know, we have to restore harmony with Mother Earth, and Solartopia is the way to do it. And the first step to Solartopia is to stop nuclear power.
300 years ago, Sir Thomas More invented the word utopia, where everything was going to be hunky-dory. But we know it's going to be a green-powered Earth, and that'll be Solartopia.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
We bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we love
multiplied. We needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high. And so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world.
But the nuclear plants were built in haste, with too many risks and no place for waste. And so from Seabrook to Shoreham Town, we have to shut those new plants down. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world.
Now we're fighting wars over oil. No matter who wins, it will not last. The earth is scarred, the planet is warming. Don't you think that all of it's a great big warning?
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over the
special song entitled Solartopia that featured the legendary Pete Seeger, Da Williams, David Burns, and a chorus of young friends. That Solartopia audio was from Harvey Wasserman and Dan Keller's video production posted on Harvey's Solartopia Getting to a Green Powered Earth website, www.solartopia.org. Solartopia, A Green Powered Earth AD 2030, is also the title of a unique book written by today's program guest, Harvey Wasserman. Solartopia provides a view of a possible healthy and sustainable energy future where King Kong, coal, oil, nuclear, and gas no longer poisons our biosphere or continues their political economic stranglehold over the world. This book expresses a philosophy similar to indigenous people's paradigm of having reverence for Mother Earth and concern for the well-being of all life for seven generations into the future. Once again, to learn more about Solartopia, please visit the website www.solartopia.org and read Harvey's book. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. My guest today is Harvey Wasserman. Harvey is a writer, teacher, grandfather, radio talk show host, organic farmer, and most well known as an activist for social, economic, energy, and environmental justice. He is here in Florida speaking out against plans to expand nuclear energy both in the state and across the country. As I mentioned in today's program introduction, Mr. Wasserman has inspired many people over the years, including myself, to fight for justice and the environment. I first met Harvey in the 1970s when a number of us American Indians and environmental activists came together to form the Clamshell Alliance in order to try and protect Winnemucca, a special place to generations of Seacoast tribal peoples, now called Seabrook, New Hampshire, from the infamous Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant and later proposed nuclear waste dump on my Wabanaki homeland. More than three decades later, Harvey and I are still fighting against King Kong, coal, oil, nuclear, and gas. We both are concerned about global climate change and energy justice. Sir, my next question concerns the very serious problems of nuclear waste and decommissioning atomic power plants. Many nuclear stations are very old. Many people have long worried about the increasing amounts of radioactive waste being stored at power plants. The nuclear industry's violations of Nuclear Regulatory Commission regulations and so-called safety record is horrific. In addition, with the fiasco over Yucca Mountain, the United States Department of Energy's nuclear waste plan is as unstable and unreliable as is the geology of Yucca Mountain. As you probably heard, several U.S. Geological Survey and U.S. Department of Energy scientists admitted under oath before Congress that due to political pressure, they not only falsified data, but even fabricated research in order to deceive the truth about Yucca Mountain not being a suitable storage site for nuclear waste. Harvey, would you please share any comments you may have?
Among the many problems with atomic power plants is that there's nothing to do with the waste, and the reactors themselves need to be decommissioned. And so, for example, in Florida, we have the Crystal River plant. In Minnesota, there's Monticello. In New Jersey, there's Oyster Creek. Around the country, there are other reactors that are old, that are essentially decrepit, highly radioactive, and they themselves need to be disposed of. Now, this is called decommissioning. But nobody really knows how to handle decommissioning. And so what we want to do is make sure that no new reactors are built that would add to this horrible burden of atomic waste, both from the spent fuel and the reactors themselves, and then to shut down the older reactors as fast as we possibly can as we make the transition to solartopian energy sources, wind, solar tidal, geothermal, ocean thermal, and all those. So this is the transition we need to make. To do that, we need to transform the corporations and make them responsible to the public. We need to stop waste, and which includes war, which is the ultimate waste. We have to have our agriculture go organic, get rid of all chemical fertilizers, pesticides, herbicides, stop overgrazing, overfishing, and overfarming, and switch to sustainable crops, including hemp, which would be a major source of energy and of fiber and of food. We also have to have social democracy. We have to have justice. Everyone on this planet is entitled, should be entitled, to the basics of food, clothing, housing, medical care, and education. These are the crucial ingredients for any kind of sustainable society. And finally, our population situation. People say there are too many people. I think there are too many cars, frankly. Women, the empowerment of women is the key to a population of humankind that's in sync, in sort of harmony with the earth. And that means equal rights for women, equal pay, equal justice, access to reproductive, birth control, sex education, and all forms of reproductive health. And so these are the essentials of Solartopia, and these are the essentials of the No Nukes movement.
As you were just speaking about Solartopia and essentials of the No Nukes movement, your remark about social democracy and justice is of particular importance to me as an indigenous person, as a person of color. This is why I have been so involved in the establishment and leadership of the National Environmental Justice Movement. Historically, and unfortunately even now in the 21st century, poor people and people of color have had little say or control over many things that affect their lives, like the siting of industrial facilities in poor neighborhoods. With respect to energy development, it is often indigenous peoples who are most victimized by the nuclear fuel cycle and fossil fuels development that rape our Mother Earth for coal, oil, gas, tar sands, and water. This topic of democracy, social, economic, environmental justice needs to be highlighted much more. People concerned about global climate change and energy issues, such as shutting down nuclear power, should not just focus on the scientific technical aspects of energy, as important as they are. It is necessary to think about social, economic, and political aspects of energy and the global society. As a teacher and historian, I'm sure you agree this means understanding the history of colonization. It means understanding governments and energy policy. It means understanding multinational corporations and energy markets. It means understanding transnational banking and financial institutions. In a word, it means understanding globalization of the world's energy resources. Until these forces and interconnections are dealt with, there will be no real social democracy, transparency, accountability, or justice. I question if there ever was any intention for equality, inclusion, or justice for Native peoples in the so-called democratic American society. The history of U.S. congressional legislation towards my Native American peoples is a long record of Washington's dictatorial theft and control of Native peoples' land, energy, and natural resources. The infamous 1887 Dawes Act, the 1934 Wheeler-Howard Indian Reorganization Act, and the 1982 Indian Mineral Development Act, among others I could cite, exemplify this sad truth of history. This is why people concerned about climate change and energy issues need to support indigenous people's struggles for sovereignty and self-determination. The planet's energy future must be a decentralized, community-based, equitable power system controlled by the people. The current greedy corporate, political, economic, industrial system that is squeezing the earth like a python snake should be seen as a crime against humanity, against future generations, and a crime against Mother Earth. Harvey, would you please elaborate more on the vision of Solartopia based on social democracy and justice?
You know, we also want, with our energy supply, Solartopian technologies, and it's community controlled. This means that the people who use the electricity own the source of it. This is solar panels, wind machines, the biofuel industry, and so on. Because one of the real problems with nuclear power is that it's owned and operated by large corporations on a centralized grid system where nobody has real control. That means that it's never going to be democratic, it's never going to be fair, it's never going to be ecological. It really needs to be owned on a community basis. Those are the keys to a Solartopian future, and by stopping nuclear power and taking the resources that would go to nuclear plants and turning them into renewables, that's really the key to our future and to our survivability on this planet.
Kids in the schoolyard, cows in the field, in a Pennsylvania town, it's another day. But at Three Mile Island, something was wrong. In the power plant, not 2 miles away, valve jammed open, and the holding tanks blew, and the leak spread for miles around. With a bubble of hydrogen trapped under the dome, that plant damn near melted down. 3 Mile Island blew down their lives. Next time it happens, how many will die? Got our eyes on the future, got our feet on the ground. Gonna shut down the nukes, shut them down. Shut down the nukes, shut them down. Metro Edison said one thing, feds the reverse. The TV and press had their fun. Out of all the confusion, just one thing came through. No one knew what the hell was going on. Evacuation would have ended the game, so they said there was no reason to go. But they didn't say too much about the workers at the plant, who as always caught the brunt of the blow. 3 Mile Island blew down their lives. Next time it happened, how many will die? Got our eyes on the future, got our feet on the ground. Gonna shut down the nukes, shut them down. Shut down the nukes, shut them down. The sun it shines, the wind it blows. There's a thousand different ways to save fuel. So when some corporation tells me we got no choice, they might as well be calling me a fool. They say the system worked and no one was killed. They say they'll make them safer than before. But they're gambling with our children and they're gambling with the world. And their money don't seem worth dying for. 3 Mile Island blew down their lives. Next time it happens, how many will die? Got our eyes on the future, got our feet on the ground. Gonna shut down the nukes, shut them down. Shut down the nukes, shut them down. Shut down the nukes, shut them down.
Music from the band Atomic Cafe from a cassette recording in our Wolf Mountain Radio audio library. The name of that song was Shut Down the Nukes, Shut Them Down. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, that song is about the historic 3 Mile Island nuclear power plant disaster near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. In 1979, TMI's Unit 2 experienced a loss of coolant accident in the Babcock and Wilcox built pressurized water reactor. Large amounts of nuclear reactor coolant escaped due to a stuck open PORV valve. There were also a number of Metropolitan Edison plant staff operating mistakes. One particular disturbing item to many people is, despite a presidential commission, investigation by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, examination by Pennsylvania officials, and review by the nuclear industry, which was more of a public relations campaign, the American public will never know the full truth and extent of what occurred at 3 Mile Island. It is my understanding that required environmental monitoring equipment for detecting radiation were not even working for the first several days of the 5-day TMI emergency. This means it was not possible to accurately know the epidemiological impacts to human health. In addition, radiation released from the plant into the environment contaminated the food chain. Nuclear isotopes were absorbed into farm fields, crops, livestock, lakes, ponds, streams, fisheries, forests, and wildlife. 3 Mile Island is considered to be the most serious U.S. commercial nuclear power accident in American history. As today's program guest, Harvey Wasserman, can tell you, many people remember the catastrophic 1986 Chernobyl disaster in the Ukraine, then part of the Soviet Union. What is less well known by the general public is that there is a long history of nuclear power accidents both in the United States and around the world. This is one of the issues I spoke about at a plenary session at this year's PowerShift Youth Conference on Climate Change and Energy Justice. The website www.atomicarchive.com provides a list of many major nuclear power plant accidents. In America, dating back to 1952, there have been and continues to be many critical incidents at nuclear facilities. Many are serious violations of U.S. laws and Nuclear Regulatory Commission standards. Unless one monitors watchdog groups like Atomic Archive, Nuclear Information Resource Service, or Beyond Nuclear, this information is rarely on the news. Harvey, this brings me to the topic of risk and liability issues of nuclear power, which is what I am asking you to please now speak about. Since this is a worldwide audience, would you please briefly talk about the Price-Anderson Act passed by Congress in 1957 in order to deal with the reluctance of banks, insurance companies, and electric power utilities to finance, build, insure, and operate nuclear power plants?
The Atomic Energy Commission is really responsible for the birth of nuclear power. The Atomic Energy Commission's first task was to build nuclear weapons. They grew out of the Manhattan Project, and they're the ones who continued to develop atomic bombs, to test them, to come up with the hydrogen bomb, and all those terrible things, actually. And so when the nuclear industry was looking around for other things to do, they came up with using atomic energy, the power that destroyed Hiroshima and Nagasaki, for generating electricity. It was an unproven technology. It was a guess, basically. They built one reactor at Shippingport, Pennsylvania, under the strict supervision of Hyman Rickover, who was the head of the nuclear navy. And you could argue that that plant, you know, worked reasonably well. On the other hand, there were massive radiation releases that did harm the health of the people in the area. But nonetheless, the Atomic Energy Commission wanted more nuclear plants. They couldn't get the private utility companies to build them. The Congress said, okay, if you're not going to build them, we will take the burden off of you of the liability for a major accident. The utilities said fine to that. So in 1957, Congress passed the Price-Anderson Act. The Price-Anderson Act limited the liability of the private owners of nuclear power plants to, at the time, $540 million, which was ridiculous. Even at the time, there was a study done at the Sandia Laboratories that said that an accident at a nuclear plant could wipe out an area the size of Pennsylvania. It's interesting they chose Pennsylvania. At any rate, the industry said, okay, we'll let the federal government take the burden, but in 15 years from now, private industry, private insurance companies will be lining up to write policies on nuclear power. Well, it never happened, obviously. And so 55 years later, we still have nuclear power industry that cannot get private insurance for a liability for a major disaster. And not only that, but the so-called new generation of reactors also can't get private liability insurance. And so they're covered now as of 2020, as a recent bill was passed. And it's pathetic. But the bottom line is, if you own a house, look at your homeowner's policy. There is a paragraph in all homeowner's policies that says that if you lose your house as a result of an accident at a nuclear power plant, the federal government is liable. And that's where we're at with this industry. So they can't get private financing. They can't get private insurance. They have no solution for the waste problem. And they can't compete. So what are we talking about here? Why are we even thinking of building new nuclear plants? Makes no sense.
Do you fly to when every season's rolled into one? Hey kangaroo, where do you run to? Why listen for the sound of the man with a gun, the hunter's gun? Mother Nature keeps on crying tears of rain from the sky. It makes you wonder about tomorrow. Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? Is Mother Earth going to die? Long, long ago, in the dream time, our Mother Earth, she was beautiful and new. Then changes came to the landscape. Now there's cities found and factories on you. There's a mess on you. Mother Nature keeps on crying. Tears of rain from the sky. It makes you wonder about tomorrow. Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? Is Mother Earth going to die? Oh, 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 oh. Little children of tomorrow, I hope you find a better way to live, to a better day. Mother Nature keeps on crying. Tears of rain from the sky. It makes you wonder about tomorrow. Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? Mother Nature keeps on crying. Tears of rain from the sky. It makes you wonder about tomorrow. Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? Is Mother Earth going to die? Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? Is Mother Earth going to die?
You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kidichi Native Center. Yat-Kidichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kidichi Native Center is an intertribal, culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat-Kidichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat-Kidichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat-Kidichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kidichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat-Kidichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat-Kidichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat-Kidichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yatkidichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yatkidichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yatkidichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yatkidichi Native Center, write to Yatkidichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yatkidichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakusin, to all of our relations.
The music you heard prior to our Yatkidichi Native Center program identification was from Aborigine singer-songwriter Johnny Huckle. The name of that song was Is Mother Earth Going to Die? Johnny gifted me his cassette when I met him and other Aborigines from what is now called Australia in 1982 at an international Indigenous Peoples Conference focused on multinational corporations desecrating and destroying Native territories throughout the world. The history of white settler conquest of Australia, as well as the racism and government control over Aborigines, is so sadly similar to the United States' historical and contemporary relationships to my Native American peoples. The case of uranium mining and testing atomic weapons on sacred lands to both tribal peoples is a special case in point. Well, dear friends, we are nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. I really want to again thank today's program guest, Mr. Harvey Wasserman, for sharing his views on Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Please listen next time to Wolf Mountain Radio for the continuation of my conversation with Harvey in Program 2 of this special interview series. Listeners interested to learn more about Solartopia, Harvey's list of authored books, and issues he is involved with, please visit these websites, www.harveywasserman.com, www.solartopia.org, www.nukefree.org, and www.freespeech.org. We shall conclude today's program with music by Tokeya Tinanjin, Lakota flutist Kevin Locke, off his Makoshe music CD entitled The First Flute. The name of the tune is Meadowlark Song. Meadowlarks are birds ranging throughout the United States. Native peoples of the prairies greatly appreciated these winged relatives, since their diet of insects and plant seeds often indicated the location of buffalo on the grasslands. Female meadowlarks also build a nest in a ground depression, lining it with grass and using grass and plant material, meadowlarks weave a waterproof dome roof over the nest. I'm sure our native lodges were designed from this avian architect. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, kinoan wantakwasin to all of our relations.